This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Accelerate your day with today's business headlines with Volvo Cars.
It's coming up to 7:45. You're listening to The Morning Run with me, Melissa Idris, also Joyce Go and Sharad Kutan. Now, coming up in about 20 minutes, we have The Breakfast Grill today as we continue our analysis post GE14. Joining us on the show, we have Karim Razlan, the CEO of KRA Group. Now, we're going to be, looking at what to expect from the new government.
But just to know, if you don't know who Karim is, you've been living on a different planet for the last couple of days. Karim, of course, went viral. He's, in some sense, a kind of a meme for his takedown of the Elections Commission on Astro Awani. Remember, as the results were coming in, and he says, I'm going to quote him, "This is the kind of ridiculous rubbish, ... We're going to get him to repeat that line because it was brilliant.
It was brilliant. Yes, I have to say, I was on air and I heard about that. Had to go and look up what he was saying. So apparently, you know, it was really a wonderful thing to hear, but also really in keeping with the tone, you know, given that we are seeing, I guess, media freedom, a lot more, being liberal in the media. So to hear Karim say that was wonderful. I also have to note, Karim is often mistaken for his brother. Cam Razlan is often mistaken for his brother Karim, given that they both sound very similar, and the fact that Cam is often seen as an abbreviation for Karim. But Cam Razlan, being a BFM, a regular on A Bit of Culture, and also Sharad, you've been on his show many times before.
Yeah, and we had Karim on the grill not so long ago, talking about the mood on the ground, and he talked about where Malaysia was going, and I think he did anticipate some of the shifts that we've seen in this general election. I mean, he wasn't looking so much into a crystal ball, but taking a measure of what was happening in the country and feeling something change in the mood.
All right. Well, that's more on that with Karim Razlan of KRA Group on The Breakfast Grill in about 20 minutes. But first, let's turn to Moody's, because Moody's, the week before GE14, they reaffirmed Malaysia's sovereign credit rating at A3 with a stable outlook. But now, with Pakatan taking over Putrajaya, Moody's says that this marks uncharted territory for Malaysia. In fact, we have Moody's on the line, the Vice President and Senior Analyst, Anushka Shah. She is of the Sovereign Risk Group with Moody's Investor Services. So good morning, Anushka. Now, from a foreign credit ratings perspective, what exactly is Moody's key takeaway given the results of GE14?
Well, thanks. The opposition's win, as you said, in the parliamentary elections does mark uncharted territory for Malaysia, because the country has never, ever before witnessed a transition of power away from the Barisan Nasional since its independence. I think at this stage, from a sovereign perspective, very little is known about the opposition's full range of economic policies. Its electoral pledges have so far lacked details that would allow for a full assessment of their budgetary and macroeconomic impact. And so we've not been able to draw credit conclusions based on what the information that we have so far.
Well, Anushka, given some of Pakatan's promises as outlined in its manifesto, taken at face value, what would that mean for Malaysia's sovereign credit rating?
Yes, indeed. Some campaign promises, if they are implemented without any other adjustments, would be credit negative for Malaysia's sovereign. These include a proposed abolishment of the GST, which without any offsetting measures would increase Malaysia's reliance on oil-related revenues. And in the near term, at least, we find would narrow the government's revenue base. Another policy pledge that we've been focusing on is the reintroduction of fuel subsidies, which we think would distort market-based pricing mechanisms, and that would have effects on both the fiscal position and the balance of payments.
Anushka, just looking at Malaysia's macroeconomic fundamentals, how much will that factor into Moody's considerations? Do you expect this, you know, uncertainty when it comes to a lack of details with policy for the new Pakatan Harapan government to affect the Malaysian economy?
There will be policy uncertainty, but that may just be in the near term. As I mentioned, our rating assessment is a combination of macroeconomic fundamentals as well as event risks that could influence or change these fundamentals over the long term. politics and political developments are a part of these event risks. In general, a key factor that has underpinned Malaysia's economic sovereign rating is its strong growth path, as well as its competitive and diverse economy. At the same time, a key credit challenge is the government's high debt burden. So how economic policy shapes these strengths and challenges will play a role in shaping the sovereign credit rating and outlook as well.
Also, when you talked about the high debt burden for the government, when it comes to, say, cutting or abolishing the GST, do you think the federal government will have enough or better sources of revenue to make up for the shortfall? Or is that just a question of whether the expenses of the government can be cut?
Well, it would be a combination of both. We haven't seen any improvements in revenues as a share of GDP since 2002. I'm not mistaken. So there has been a steady fall in revenues. And at the same time, a lot of the deficit reduction that has been achieved over the last 8 years has been driven primarily by expenditure cuts. So I think it would be a combination of both, whether they can bring offsetting measures to the table and whether expenditures can be further cut, given that they've already been trimmed so substantially.
Anushka, thanks so much for your time. That was Anushka Shah, Vice President and Senior Analyst of Foreign Risk Group at Moody's Investor Services. As we take a look again, you know, at the strength of the Malaysian economy now going into what will be the Pakatan Harapan, a challenge for the Pakatan Harapan to convince the broader, all the investors that, you know, the economy will continue going strong despite the cancelling of the goods and services tax, which is top of the reform list on Pakatan Harapan's manifesto.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the sales services tax, how much they have accumulated, that was about 17 billion ringgit. This was before GST came into force on April 1st, 2015. And after GST, how much GST that has been collected, the GST revenue that we've collected is about 43 billion ringgit. So that's about 20 billion ringgit shortfall. That's the gap that you're looking at, you know. But Tun M has come out to say that, you know, there'll be no drop in revenue even if GST is axed. So basically, they're looking at looking at mismanagement of funds. You're saying that they're going to stop the leakages and that will help plug the gap.
Yeah, but it doesn't, I guess these are aspirations. We'll have to see what the numbers are eventually.
Yes.
But I think long term for all governments around the world, you know, the source of revenue, right? I mean, where do they get, and in broadening the tax base, I mean, our tax base is quite narrow and in terms of who pays income tax. And is that a question of greater enforcement and making sure that people do, in fact, pay their taxes and declare adequately their incomes and so on and so forth?
I do have to say, though, I mean, you know, the challenge for Dr. Mahathir now as 7th Prime Minister will be that, you know, he needs to convince the world that the economy can grow despite what will be, as you mentioned, Joyce, a shortfall in government revenue. We're looking at what The Edge Weekly calls a triple whammy of narrower government revenue sources, increased government spendings on subsidies and reduced government borrowings. Increased government subsidies because, you know, we also know that that Pakatan Harapan want to stabilize the price of petrol and introduce targeted petrol subsidies, which there could be an issue there, because if you look at right now, Bank Negara says that subsidies really are not going to where they're needed the most.
Mm. And Sharad, you mentioned about broadening the tax base, right? I mean, GST is a broad-based tax platform because it covers from, you know, everyone, retailers and traders, whereas sales tax only covers manufacturers, and services tax covers certain prescribed services such as like professional services and that sort. So
Joyce, do you think there will be a complications in removing the GST? Because it took so long and it was so difficult to put GST in place, you know, the training of people, putting in the
systems,
the architecture. What happens now when we revert back to SST, whether that would mean unwinding, uncomfortable unwinding for a lot of people?
It's a good question, Mel. And in the Itch Financial Daily, they have a story. They spoke to tax experts and they're saying as well that perhaps with SST coming back, they might broaden that base as well for SST. you know, so that it's a broader base as opposed to what it was.
The SST had a lot of exemptions, didn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, and not everything is under that net as compared to GST.
Yeah, I think also the one interesting story you hear from, you know, businessmen with regard to GST is the way the payments are made. They have to pay up front the GST, right, the tax, whereas they have a slightly different rhythm as to how they collect the money from, you know, their associates. And that's often put them under tremendous kind of a credit crunch. I mean, cash flow issues, right, for them.
That's right.
And that's pushed a lot of people under. And so maybe this is going to be, I don't know if it's true, but it might be welcomed by some of the business community that's had problems with the GST and how it's and its processes.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. I have to say that I'm not for the Dr. Mahathir doesn't like the idea, the term rollback, but I'm not for the removal of GST. I think it's been good that we have had the GST in terms of broadening our tax base. I had hoped to hear for fewer exemptions on that exemption list, fewer items on the exemption list. But again, it really is about if you're going to remove the GST, how are you going to make up for the shortfall? And if you're going to say that, you know, you're going to add to subsidies, make sure those subsidies are going to where it's targeted. When it comes to, say, where it's going, the B40, the bottom 40 percent of households are only getting 14% of the subsidies. And these are figures coming out from Bank Negara.
Yeah, and you can see that the top 20% get 42%.
Imagine the misallocation of subsidies. It's meant to be for the bottom 40, for those who really need it, and it turns out that the bulk of the subsidy is going to the top 40%.
Yeah, again, misallocation, and there's also misuse. I mean, Tunam has come out to say that funds were misused, and basically the lack of funds in the government is not because of insufficient income. He's saying that funds were misused, and they're going to look into that.
Yeah, well, so the other things that Dr. Mahathir has said he wants to lay down the law essentially is make the economy business friendly in terms of open tender system for all major projects, and local firms will get first choice for infrastructure projects.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see as well. Apparently, there'll be tender. They're going to look at there'll be open tenders, and we're looking forward to more transparency when it comes to this. And
I'm curious to see what this would mean for construction stocks, right? So if you're going to review major projects and you're going to say that perhaps local firms will be the first choice for infrastructure projects, come market open, are we going to see construction stocks fly this morning?
Well, you know, speaking of the open tender, the Pakatan governments of Penang and Selangor have always claimed that there was a kind of open tender dividend for them in the way they had their projects done. So because of that, they had huge savings as well. And so they've been able to, really have a very healthy balance book because of this open tender system. Something that I guess is also in the air, the idea of greater transparency and accountability. We have the 100-day promises, but this is a government potentially for the next 5 years, and so beyond that, what's going to be happening, and we'll just have to see, I guess.
Right, looking at it in the long term as opposed to perhaps pressure in the short term. We also want to take a look at this Jedi Council, the Council of Eminent Persons, excuse me. One of the biggest announcements made by the Pakatan Harapan government was the establishment of this council. They will be advising the new government in its first 100 days. In fact, we caught up with Tricia Yeo from IDEAS, or the Institute of Democratic and Economic Affairs, to give us some background on these eminent persons.
It's the first of its kind, really. I don't remember the Barisan having had such a council. Many of the people within the political parties, I mean, Tun M actually said this, right, in his announcement, that not all have had the sufficient depth or length of experience in leading within government. And so the unsurprising thing is actually bringing these people in as experts. And as we know, they have been of late very much supportive of the opposition. They are also old friends of Tun Mahathir. And I think because Tun feels rather rushed in terms of trying to get reforms done, he doesn't have the time, or he feels that he doesn't have the time to depend on a new, fresh slate of leadership to turn things around, given, number one, his age, and number two, I think the pressures that people will be putting on the coalition to reform the country very quickly. I mean, he has to look at the manifesto promises, his 100 days promises. There's a lot to be done, and these are the senior people who I think he can readily feel he can depend on.
That was Tricia, your fellow with the think tank Ideas. Now, he really has gotten the old gang back together again. But what do you guys make of the fact that we have Prof. Jomo Kwame Sundram on this council? Because, you know, Prof. Jomo has been very critical of Mahathir and Tun Daim in the past.
Well, that's interesting, right? And if we, when we spoke about it on Saturday, there was this idea that maybe the council doesn't have to have, you know, just one idea.
It doesn't diversity need,
there's
in
diversity,
ideas,
the conversation.
Yeah.
And after all, they only exist for about 100 days, don't they?
Okay, so yeah,
there's a term limit. Okay, but it's good not to surround yourself with all yes men as well. It's good to get different opinions and not just yes, yes, yes all the time. And then after that, you know, they could be telling you things that just to make you happy, but that's not what's happening on the ground.
Yeah, and of course, there's several things involved in this, which is, you know, and Robert Kwok's inclusion, I think, is also very interesting from the China angle.
All right, it's coming up to the opening bell at Bursa Malaysia. Sabrina Magdalene will give you the opening numbers. After that, we're going to cross over to Keith Kam from the news team for the first day, for the teaser of the first day of the market open after a long public holiday. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Fuel your business drive with the Volvo S90 T8 twin engine. So cost efficient, it makes good business sense. Volvo, made by Sweden.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.